Good morning. We don't often connect our stories, especially the familiar ones, together. The text that we just heard Char read from Luke, that is our text, the Sermon on the Mount, the voicing of love your enemies. We know it well and love it deeply. And usually that's over here in, like I was saying last week, the new version of the law. And then we have the Old Testament that's just sort of hanging out and doing its own thing and telling its own story. But I'd like to suggest this week that you hold on to what you just heard as I read this story of the culmination of the Joseph story. And see if you don't recognize some of the qualities from the first in the story of the second. This is Genesis 45, verses 3 through 11, and then verse 15. And it's the culmination of Joseph revealing himself to his brothers. Joseph said to his brothers, "I am Joseph. Is my father still alive?" But his brothers could not answer him, so dismayed were they at his presence. Then Joseph said to his brothers, "Come closer to me." And they came closer. He said, "I am your brother, Joseph, who you sold into Egypt. And now, do not be distressed or angry with yourselves because you sold me here, for God sent me before you to preserve life. For the famine in this land has been here for 2 years, and there are 5 more years yet to go, in which there will be neither plowing nor harvest. God sent me before you to preserve you, for you a remnant on the earth, and to keep alive for you many survivors. So it was not you who sent me here, but God. He has made me a father to Pharaoh and lord of his house and ruler over all the land of Egypt. Hurry, go up to my father and say to him, 'Thus says your son Joseph, Yahweh has made me lord of Egypt. Come down to me and do not delay. You shall settle in the land of Goshen, and you shall be near me, you and your children and your children's children, as well as your flocks and your herds and all that you have. I will provide for you there, since there are 5 more years of famine yet to come, so that you and your household and all that you have shall not come to poverty.' And he kissed all of his brothers and wept upon them. And after that, his brothers talked with him." Mercy is hard. It's one of those things that is difficult to pin down and harder still to define. It's sort of like the notion of something being obscene back in the day. You know it when you see it. But it's really hard to define it ahead of time. In the same way, we know mercy when we see it. We know when we find it. But it can be far hard to know it or anticipate it ahead of time. Think about it for yourselves. When was the last time that you were shown mercy? And plenty of times, to be sure, but probably not in those terms exactly. I have to say that I've spent most of the week trying to think of an illustration of my own life, and the best I could do was that time where I got the warning instead of the ticket. It's not one that we are readily see there. So often we just sort of think about our lives in terms of these sort of penny-ante realities that we forget where mercy can be, and mercy is there. And truth be told, as we somewhat have stepped a little bit back from God, the great and all-powerful, holding you like a spider above the flame, which was a good idea, we've also lost a little sense of God is merciful to me. God shows me mercy. And even that can take a little bit of thinking. Making it harder still are the broad definitions and qualifications for mercy to be mercy. By its nature, mercy can only be a gift. If there is work to be done or expectations to be satisfied in order to gain the prize, then it's not mercy. If there's a transaction to be accomplished, well, it doesn't work that way. When someone throws themselves on the mercy of the court, the defendant accepts and articulates their guilt and the authority of the court to act upon that guilt. There's a recognition that justice requires a response for there to be justice, but at the same time recognizes that justice can still exist when wrongs are confessed, when contrition is realized, and when the truth can be articulated. And then mercy can be granted. There must be something essentially supernatural about it. Out of the normal order of the universe in our world for mercy to be known. For all the essential natures and qualities of God, all the characteristics that we have known of God, mercy is one of the ones that we struggle to find in our own life. When have you described a friend to someone else of, well, he's a good farmer, he's a great guy, and he's a whole lot of fun, and oh yeah, he is so merciful. It's just not there. It's not one that we tie together. Most of the time when we hear our gospel for this morning, it's in the context of receiving the law. This is Luke's setting of the Sermon on the Mount, only for Luke it's a plain. And it's usually paired with a different piece of the Old Testament than I did today. Usually you have the Ten Commandments and the Sermon on the Mount. The original law, and then the comment on the law that explains everything and expands it from there. And that's how we receive these words from Jesus. This is the new law. Go and do likewise and be accountable to this law and this time. But as I said, I think that this pairing works as well because it's a story giving an example of a precedent. The fact that I tied Genesis passage to this sermon more closely than the Luke has everything to do with length and familiarity than it does importance. So think about this sermon as addressing both passages and not just one. Because really, they're in conversation with one another. Even though we don't readily think about it in those terms. Because they're both on point in mercy. In Luke, Jesus provides the teaching and the interpretive framework of how love works in real life. In Genesis, we receive the conclusion of this chapter-long epic soap opera detailing the Joseph journey from here to there and finally arriving to be a dispenser and an example of mercy. After decades of drama and jealousy and fear and deprivation, the brothers meet up, and Joseph ostensibly has already framed them as thieves to test them. And only then does reconciliation, abundance, and mercy overcome separation, anger, and deprivation. And all was alive and well. The Joseph story embodies well the commandments and the teaching that Jesus gives later on. Even for we Anabaptists, for whom these words of Jesus are central and among our most sacred, that doesn't mean that any of this is easy. Love those who hate you. Pray for those who persecute you. If someone strikes you on one cheek, turn the other as well. And even as we have multiple ways of interpreting this and knowing this, we cannot and should not pretend that it's easy to live out. It's simple enough words, and it's simple to understand them on their face, but they're extremely difficult to live of how we might do any of this, or if it's even a good idea. And we find ourselves going back here time and again to check if there isn't some sort of footnote that we didn't miss in the sermon that gave a bit of interpretation that makes all this a little bit more realistic than literally putting ourselves at risk. And even when we have our own individual interpretations of how this works and to what it stands and to why, we cannot escape the serious examination of ourselves of, okay, this is what Jesus said. How does this mean, and what does this mean for me? We are used to relationships that are far more transactional than relational. We respond in the ways that we are treated, or we respond to the tune of voice that we thought we heard along the way. Our feelings have a whole lot more to do with how we respond in our situation than our ethics do. And moving into this way of life, this way that says, you know what? We can do this in a way where one thing gets another, where there's only a reciprocal relationship, and puts that to the side, but instead says, the way of life and the way of the kingdom is the way of love, even when it's hard. That's always a challenge. It's always a struggle. And it always will be. Perhaps this is what it's meant about picking up our own cross and following Jesus. It's less about saying, well, in order to follow Jesus, you have to suffer in the same way as the cross. As much as it says, in order to follow Jesus, you have to pick up something that you struggle with and find ungainly and hard to manage, but struggle all the same. As much as we can empathize and are encouraged by Joseph's journey, and development to getting to a place where he can extend mercy, he is not ultimately the model. Jesus is. Joseph's story begins with betrayal and ends with mercy. Jesus' story begins with mercy and the coming of God with us, and ends in betrayal as the powers reject the very ideas and the notion of God with us and the viability that they have. And they reject it in the only way that they know how. They say no and put Christ to death. And then we know that the circle does circle back to mercy in the form of the risen Christ. Joseph has to live a whole life to get around to where Jesus begins, much like we are constantly living our lives shaped by the Spirit to become more than what we are. It takes time and experience and patience and, yes, practice to get to the point where mercy is even part of our lexicon, let alone part of our character. But mercy is essential to the nature and the character of the living God, and God's dependable and abundant mercy is shown in Jesus from the very first. Following the way Christ asks us time and again requires us to manifest mercy as we manifest God with us. Perhaps the articulation of love for one's enemy is less about setting an alternative set of laws that we must follow in order to be righteous, as much as it is about guiding us into a way of being in God's mercy, through God's mercy, of God's mercy, no matter what comes along the way. Perhaps the commands of the Sermon on the Mount are simply the instructions of the practicalities of the impractical yet indispensable discipline of following on. Maybe we're given the challenge of love as we have been loved, as immense as that is, to simply inspire us again into something that is beyond ourselves. Several years ago, I had the unique opportunity to walk with somebody in a hard situation. He had been an over-the-road truck driver, and he was part of the community in Winnipeg. And some years before I even knew him, he suffered an accident. No one really knows exactly what happened, but a lot occurred, and he ended up killing 3 high schoolers on the road in the middle of the night. And he asked me to simply walk with him as he went and stood trial, pleading guilty, as we went and listened to the victim impact statements for a full day, as you sat and listened to the pain that could not be made better. To go with him as he bid adieu to his own family, to go off and face the possibility of, even after this court sentence, I may well be going to prison immediately and not just there. It was an excruciating and holy couple of days. And after it was all said and done, and he was sentenced to several years in prison, to be served in about a fortnight after that, I was left to drive him away from the courthouse while the camera was rolled, because as you can well imagine, this was a bit of a sensation by now. And I was wondering then and now, where is mercy? What does it look like here? As we rolled away from the hearing and down the road, we stopped actually where the roadside markers were that marked the accident. And we got out and we knelt, we wept, we prayed the only prayer that we could. Christ have mercy. God have mercy. There's no easy answers. There's no easy prescription for, well, what is the loving thing to do here? What happened, and it was horrible, and still is. But it was also a challenge to take responsibility and to serve his time and to even ultimately lose his family along the way. I have no better answers today than I did then. And that's only to claim as an article of faith that there is mercy in God's love, wholeness in God's time, and healing in the fullness of both. For mercy is always rooted in God's love. And that is what God's story and God's people is about, no matter what the time. It is love when God comes and encounters all those who have turned, actively or not, away from God's will in the ministry of Jesus Christ. It's merciful love for the created one who keeps coming and loving creation even when we turn around and run away from the Creator. And it's loving a Creator who continues to recreate and reach out without abandoning us to our own fate. It is love shaped in the image of the divine that spurs Yahweh to love the children who fail to be faithful, to faithfully affirm the full humanity of one another, let alone that of the God who created them. We might struggle with this notion of mercy and grace, but in a sense, we are enemies of God, left to our own devices. We continue to defy and to run and to hurt and to do that which is against that which is most deeply and utterly intended. That's what we mean when we talk about sin. And I'll say it for myself. I am a sinner without reservation. But that's not all the story. We speak when we ought to be silent, offering insult as opposed to love. And we are silent when we ought to most speak on that which God cares about most, the humanity of every individual. We injure that which we are meant, that which was meant to be good and holy and wholesome every day. And it goes on and on and on. But friends, even in this, even for all of this, God loves us, God's own enemies. not in some notional, emotional affection that has no realistic impact, but loves us with a force and a persistence that will not let go no matter what. God turns the other cheek. God prays for those who persecute them. God does all this and then invites us to do the same. It is mercy that we have received, and persistence that will not is mercy that we have received, and mercy that we are invited in turn to share. Jesus is not inviting us into the task that we might fail, though we often do. Jesus is inviting us to come and be like God, and to enter in God's reconciling work that will bring the world into harmony in God's own time. Joseph was granted a glimpse into that mercy with the brothers who hurt him. Jesus exemplifies that pattern time and again and invites us only to come and follow after him and to be like God. My friends, may we know deeply the mercy that we have received, be amazed by it, and be so shaped by the merciful one that we can only exude mercy in return. This is our challenge. This is our struggle. And this is our salvation, come what may. Thanks be to God.